She's lived a life with a goal to help others. Hey, it's Drew, and welcome to Fascinating People, brought to you by 99.3 Moose FM. This is the show where we grab somebody from the West Nipissing area, and we talk with them for 30 minutes. It doesn't matter who they are, because everybody is fascinating. You just have to get them to tell you why. Shannon joined us in the studio telling us about her life, how she found herself in West Nipissing, and what she did after she arrived. Made gardens for children, and is currently part of a search and rescue organization. And if you want to know more, you just have to listen in to Fascinating People. By the way, if you or someone you know wants to be a guest on this show, simply email me, drew@moosefm.com. I'm sure we can work something out. But for right now, let's join in with Shannon and learn a little bit more about her life.
My name's Shannon Trump, and I live in Desaunier. I've been a resident of West Nipissing for 6 years.
Where are you right now, sorry?
Desaunier, exactly halfway between River Valley and Field.
Oh, son of a... I'm still just a year into this community.
Oh, okay.
I'm still learning the maps and yeah. Everything else. Okay, so how long have you been here?
We moved here in August of 2013.
Do you mind if I ask what the reason was?
So my husband works in the Arctic. He does a 2-week-in, 2-week-out rotation. And our in-laws, his mom had moved up here in 2007, I think. And we'd always kind of kept wanting to come. And I was still working at the time. And then I was diagnosed with cancer, stage 4 breast cancer in 2009. And finished all my treatments in 2011, which I then followed up with a cranial cervical surgery in which they removed part of my skull and the top of my spine, and had a really difficult recovery from that. And then thusly, I decided not to go back to work. Mm-hmm. And we could then move anywhere we wanted. And so my husband, his big thing was, let's go to Sudbury for coffee. And we lived just outside of Kitchener. So we finally came to West Nipissing for coffee and loved it. It was like I came home when I came here. I grew up in Niagara, on the Niagara Escarpment, little farming communities. So coming to West Nipissing was really, I feel like I've been here my whole life.
So these medical things, they were in Kitchener and then afterwards you moved up here?
Yes.
And it was for your husband to just be a little bit closer to family and kind of have a more of a small town feel.
And, you know, we really wanted to get out of Southern Ontario, you know, especially now when we go back and visit, you know, you feel the pollution, you know, you don't really realize it when you're living there. And, you know, we'd been visiting here so often since they came, and we knew how beautiful and clean, and it was everything we enjoyed doing. So it was a no-brainer.
So what are you up to now? So you came in here 2011, you said.
2013.
Sorry. Apologies. 2000. Yep. Oh, it was 2011.
I had my brain surgery.
Your brain surgery. I'm just making a timeline.
That's fine.
So you're here in 2013.
Yes.
You say you had just stopped working after that point?
Pretty much. Yeah. The previous June or October, I believe, I had worked my last shifts. And then I was working in long-term care. I went into nursing when I was 18. I worked 13 till 2003 in psychiatry in Hamilton. I worked forensic psychiatry and geriatric mental health. After I got pregnant with my son and had him in 2005, I moved completely to long-term care on a part-time basis, and then incurred all my health issues, were sort of a cascading event. And I decided that spent a lot of time on the other side of the bed rail, mm-hmm. And it was a really different experience as a nurse, and just was ready to, you know, commit to my family. And fortunately, we were in a position with my husband working that I could do that.
So it wasn't really, it wasn't really like a physical ailment that stopped you. It was more of just
a choice.
I've had enough of this life. I want to have something, a new life.
Yes. Yes. Spending the almost 2 years away from my occupation really let me, you know, get free again and experience life on all kinds of different levels. And so, you know, it was nice not to have to be able to go back to that grind of a full-time position. And to volunteer, especially after being sick and experiencing the support of so many people and then moving away. I've always done a lot of volunteering, like within my job and within my communities, but it was my opportunity to pay it forward. And just, you know, this community is all about volunteerism, and it was really easy to jump in.
So I was good. So you're here in 2018. You said you had your son in 2005. So you would have been 8 when you got here.
Yes. Grade 3 at Whitewoods.
Is that what it was? It was just, I want to be here with my son.
Yep.
And that was your plan at that
point?
It
actually started out, I was volunteering in the library at the school.
Okay.
And then at the time, Whitewoods was absent of their playground. They were transitioning still to be the new school from Frank Casey. And, you know, I like spending time in the garden. I wanted to learn more about the school and get to know my son's friends. And they were getting to know me in the library. The teachers sort of just let me do my thing in the garden beside the school. And it's been a great way. I've gotten to know the school, the community. And from the school, it just sort of blossomed out. My sister had belonged to Search and Rescue Niagara for many years, and at one time was the sitting president. And there was a search in River Valley in 2016, June of, I believe. And my neighbor called me more or less and said, there's a search going on. I know you're interested in joining the team. Why don't you come out? So from there, I introduced myself to the officer in charge of the search and got involved that way. My other neighbor is a counselor and also on the field fire department, knowing of my involvement with search and rescue and them in need of volunteers for our other first responders, asked me to join. And now I'm in the process of becoming that.
So you just put your feet right to the grindstone immediately.
I like to keep busy. I'm not good with idle time.
That's fair. So let's start off with the school then, because that seems to be where your volunteer, lack of a better term, career began. So you just dropped your son off one day, looked at a plot of land and said, that could be garden.
Well, so like I was in the library for the first winter and then spring came and the kids didn't have anything to do, right? We didn't have any climbers, nothing. And I like to garden. I like to get dirty. Kids like to get dirty. So I approached the one teacher. I was loosely involved in, used to be the PTA. I don't know what they call them anymore. And
the parent teacher council,
yeah,
something
exactly,
like that.
Right. And that was where we were doing our fundraising through to get our equipment for the playground. But I was more concerned about what are kids doing right now. And so what an awesome opportunity to give them sort of an outdoor classroom, you know, a place to go for if kids need to de-stress, if they need some stimulation. What a great opportunity to talk to them about this whole sort of movement that's happening around us about knowing where your food comes from. So it's been able to generate a lot of discussions about commercially grown versus locally grown versus homegrown. How easy it is to grow your own food, how important it is for the bees and the butterflies and stuff like that. So it's been a slow process. I've put in 12 raised garden beds.
Wow.
I'm no pro gardener, and I always tell the kids and the teachers that. So I spent the first year going around to every classroom, told the kids we're having this garden project and what we hope to do for it and why we want to do this. And so the kids were so, so excited, right? And I said, everything's a learning curve. We're going to learn from our mistakes, and we're going to learn from what grows and what doesn't grow. I was always trying to focus on late harvest stuff. So when the kids came back to school, they had something to do. Since then, I'm now morph it into a community garden idea and encourage people come throughout the summer, pick a tomato, pick a weed, you know, talk to your kids. You don't have space at home for a garden or you don't want to look after one full time. Come spend 20 minutes in our garden a couple times a week kind of thing. And if we could get that idea going across the community, what an awesome opportunity that would be to support our food bank, support our communities at a grassroots level, that they can go and spend time as a family and go and pick some healthy food and talk about healthy eating and actually get outside and get some exercise. And again, really learning and knowing where our food comes from. So I started with the kids that way. Do you guys know where your fruits and vegetables come from? Because down south, you get a lot of kids saying, well, it comes from the grocery store, right? You know, and well, where does that come from? Well, from the back of the grocery store. Right. And so there's this real disconnect from where our food comes from. And especially, I think, being a nurse, being a cancer survivor, becoming a mom late in life, I was 36, all these things became overwhelmingly important to me, sort of thing.
Wow. So you're embracing this garden aspect and really showing an education for it. And
absolutely.
Like you said, is that how it works at Whitewoods now? You said you birthed it into kind of a community garden. So you run this just for the fall, or is this also a summer
so
program?
No, it's like sort of all the time. Now, unfortunately, with me living as far out of town as I do, I don't get to town maybe as often as I could to try and water and stuff. So we're going to morph our garden into a more sustainable than what it is. But again, it's been a learning thing for the kids. So I've encouraged my kids to try and, you know, come in the summer and see what you can do. And, you know, like I said, pick a weed, you know, just see how it's coming. So it is sort of something that they can connect to when they're out of school. But we always spend the fall harvesting and then tidying the beds up. And I tell them how important it is to put the, you know, your garden to bed, have a compost bin going. So we start all our, we have discussions about composting and everything. And then in the spring, it's always been sort of a natural part of the science curriculum. I think the kids grow sunflowers, they grow beans between like kindergarten and grade three. So that's where it started. Well, I get the kids to start a lot of the seeds in the class in the spring, and then they bring them out. And I've been really trying to encourage it that I don't have to be there. Trying to get the teachers to bring this to your curriculum, make this the outside classroom portion of it. I don't have to be there. Mm-hmm. I'm all about, I'll do all the hard work. I get the kids out there with me. We turn all the dirt over. They bare feet in the garden, you know, and we have some great discussions and it's a lot of fun, and we move our dirt around and we talk about why we need to make healthy dirt in the spring, and we find worms and it's great. So every year I try and encourage the teachers a little more. Let's, you know, there's some YouTube videos and stuff out there and stuff on Facebook now that, you know, talking about school should have gardens. Let's teach our kids. And grade 7 and 8s do a whole composting section in science, right? So I've started a composter so we can produce our own fertilizer, less chemical fertilizer. You know, there's just so many discussions. So the second year I think I started doing this, there's a restaurant in Timmins in which she tries to use a lot of locally sourced food. It's not sort of a constant menu. And I believe she is trying to start a movement there in which they're turning all their town planters into vegetables. Vegetables, fruits, vegetables, hanging strawberries, tomato plants, pepper plants. Again, community gardening on a way smaller scale because it's container gardening. But, you know, maybe you work over, you guys work here. They put a planter box out here. You're like, oh, I want a tomato for lunch. You go out, grab a tomato, you know, but, and I think you mentioned to me, you know, well, what about vandalism? I'm going to tell you, I've had that garden at Whitewoods for going on 5 years and never had vandals other than raccoons.
I was going to say, because usually the culprits are the adolescents because, yeah, you know, they're still developing and into adults.
And a lot of kids hang out there.
And the thing is, I also drink a lot of water during the day. So before I leave, just pour in a little bit and the strawberries would be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But it is. It's so, and I mean, vegetable and fruit plants are just as beautiful as flowering plants. And, you know, I hate to say this, but West Nipissing is sort of bordering on being an unhealthy community right now. And I know there's a lot of wellness initiatives being bantered around council. So, you know, what a great wellness initiative this would be.
I can't imagine it'd be that expensive either. You know, you've been doing this for about 6 years, well, gardening in 6 years.
Your vegetable plants are no more expensive than the money they're putting out for flowering plants. Really, in terms of cost ratio, there's not a lot of difference. The planting time would be done again. Probably, I think the students that they hire for the summer do a lot of that. Watering schedule, really no different. And again, we're just, you know, we have people that don't have a fixed address, you know, and maybe they've gone a couple of days without something to eat. You know, they know they can grab a tomato. Let's put some apple trees around town. Let's put some pear trees, you know, all that hardy stuff that'll survive up here.
No, that's actually a wonderful idea. We probably have to talk to people about logistics, but I'm on board.
I don't see it being a lot different than maintaining the plants that they maintain now. And I'm hoping that more and more the schools get involved. I think Au Chateau has put in their own raised garden for the seniors there. Raised gardening, of course, being easier for them. The school in River Valley, I had a couple of the moms from, or a couple of ladies from one of the community committees that would like to donate money to River Valley School for them to get a garden going. So especially these little communities like River Valley, I mean, we've got, what, 40 families or something that live right in town. The school's right in the middle of town. Go pick a pepper, make a salad for the night kind of thing, you know. And once people get used to the idea of it being there, people aren't going to want to go and take everything for themselves. You know, there's a sustainability in knowing. It's kind of like wildcrafting, right? You never take really more than you need because you leave the plant there to flourish. So, you know, you never take every blueberry on the plant. You never take every raspberry kind of thing. So
So interesting. The more you speak of it, the just more sense it makes. I'm really trying to be the devil's advocate to poke holes. Every response ready for me.
Well, because you're right. I have been thinking about this a long time. I've been doing it, and it's not difficult. And I mean, me and the kids do all the physical labor in that garden, and it gets done every year.
Yeah, exercise for the kids, healthy eating all around. It looks beautiful.
You're out. And look at what's going on with our beautification committee in Sturgeon Falls right now. And the town is looking beautiful and they're cleaning up all these areas, you know? So, you know, if we can put together committees that will do things like that, I don't see it being that difficult to maybe put together some of these committees that would help oversee the gardens to make sure that they're getting watered and weeded and harvested, and the excess is maybe going to the food bank or the shelter or to the neighbor that you know really needs it and won't come over and get it, kind of thing. You know, and it will bring us together as a community.
I love it. All right, well, let's see if we can flesh out that idea a little bit more. But you mentioned something a little bit earlier in our conversation. I'd like to bring up again the search and rescue aspect of your life. So you were talking briefly earlier, it was your neighbor that got you started in that avenue?
So it was probably my sister, knowing that she was part of Search and Rescue Niagara, and it was always something I was interested in. And I grew up on the Bruce Trail down in Niagara on the escarpment and everything, and learned to use a map and compass as a girl guide. But years and years, and you work and kids and you're busy and you're not doing that anymore, and those skills get rusty. So once I moved up here, started spending a lot of time in the bush with my dogs and stuff, but desire to go off trail. So I thought, well, I heard there was a search and rescue group, I'm going to join. I reached out. They were sort of in a point of the team that they were a little bit falling apart. They were lacking some dedicated administration, personal reasons, everybody's life gets busy kind of thing. And so then there was this search in River Valley in June of 2016. And I was taking French at the school in River Valley. And so the woman that taught it was sort of, you know, a neighbor up the road. And she had heard about the gentleman that went missing the night. He gone missing the night before. She called me early the next morning. The search is still on. I know you're interested in this. Maybe it's your opportunity to, you know, get your feet wet at the same time, find out who was on the team. So I got there 7 o'clock in the morning. It was kind of a little bit disorganized kind of going on because there was only one officer there. I reached out to him. They had had actually a community call out in the April trying to keep the team together. And I had put forth my name at that time saying I'd really like to just be a member, hone my skills. But if you're lacking the administration part, I was a nurse. I was a charge nurse. I can handle that. Nothing I'd ever done before. And so it kind of morphed from there after the search ended and it was a successful search. The officer that ran the search reached out to me a couple months later, said, thanks for your help. Are you still interested? You had said you would, and kind of got volunteered right into president.
Holy jumpins.
Yeah. So
I don't know what I'm doing. I might have some idea. Oh, I'm in charge.
Yes. And the team, again, people's lives were changing. We had lost a lot of membership at the time. We were under the whole policing change. And the team, when I came upon it, had been in the process of moving towards a provincially certified team. So we have a governing body called OSARVA, and that's Ontario Search and Rescue Volunteer Association. And they are our certifying body, because what it is they are connected to OPP and the training for basic searchers. For an OPP search, you have to have this, it's like a taking your first aid for the weekend. It's a week, it's 36 hours, I believe, all together to get your basic searcher certification. So the team wanted to move toward this because knowing that possibly OPP was coming, unless you're a provincially certified team, OPP cannot deploy you.
Really?
Yes. So I want to say there's 22 provincially certified teams in our province. And then we're governed by a national team called SARVAC. And you hear a lot about SARVAC, especially involved in BC. So continue to move us towards that. The gentleman who was in charge, so OSARVA breaks the province into northeast, northwest. So we fall under the northwest region.
Okay.
Northeast region.
I think we're in the northeast.
Northeast
area.
Region, sorry. North. So the gentleman who is now our president has been with OSARVA since the inception. He sort of wrote the book, has been part of the training, so knowledgeable. And he's been on a couple of different teams within the province, being their president, actually is still sort of standing member and is the trainer for this portion of the province. So I reached out to this gentleman and he's like, okay, are you guys ready? The team had spoke to him before. He says, you wouldn't believe this. He lived in Elliott Lake. I'm moving to West Nipissing. I'm like, oh my gosh, my world couldn't, you know, everything was coming into play. And so
just imagine you reaching out your arms and come hug me.
Well, and really the whole community should, because I mean, this man is incredibly knowledgeable in the search and rescue area, as well as incredibly experienced in what the provincial body has gone through to become what they are today. So he's been doing search and rescue for 50 plus years, I believe, from Thunder Bay to Marathon, all the way down the province to here now. So since Sandy Guze has joined the team, we have become a provincially certified team. We're in our second year as being an OSARBA provincially certified team. We are an open recruitment team. The only requirements are that you be 18 and you can pass a criminal record check.
So there's no, I'd imagine there's be some sort of physical test.
No, there's no physical test, but as you go through the training portion of it, you sort of understand the demands of it. Mm. So, I mean, you can be pushing really thick bush. You could be walking through a swamp.
Really physical demands, but there are going to be tests along the way that will tell you if this is right for you.
Absolutely. So as a team, we have actually done one three-team SAREX, we call them. So it's a search and rescue exercise. And we did this in a joint exercise with Timmins and North Shore Search and Rescue. North Shore Search and Rescue actually has is a four-team team. So they cover Espanola, Manitoulin, Elliott Lake, and Sudbury. So they are our closest sistering team, and then Timmins being our other. So we had a joint search and rescue with them last September, and it was a two-day event, and it was sort of a cascading event that involves three different incidents. And so it was a really good way for our team to get our feet wet that way. Our sistering teams, Georgian Bay, Ottawa, they've been around for a long time. The Ottawa team actually covers into Quebec. They have a memorandum of understanding with them, and they actually now have a seat at the emergency management table for the last 2 years because of the extensive flooding. Mm. And it's their search and rescue team that handles all the civilians that come in to do the sandbagging, et cetera, logistics. They do property monitoring at night to avoid looting. The Georgian Bay team helped with the flooding in Muskoka this year. And they're all highly experienced teams. And they've also experienced very extended searches in which 9, 10, 14 days, they've had to vector out support from other teams. And our team was about to actually have its first deployment this past year when the girls were missing in Algonquin Park.
Oh, yes, yes.
So there had been a couple of teams there for a couple of days. We were going to go down, those of us that were available, to be able to vector in and out support and let them have a rest. Because we, like all the other emergency response, we are ICS 100 certified, so we know how to work in a community, like in a crisis, how to fold it out. And it's really as we were about to be deployed, they found the girls. So, I mean, that's excellent, another successful event. But not only are we now, not only do the teams really focus on the search for lost persons, people don't get lost as much anymore. There's GPS, there's things like that. But as well as there's a really proactive movement throughout the province to keep people from getting lost. So what the provincially certified teams are able to do is we're able to become certified Adventure Smart presenters. Adventure Smart is previously the Hug a Tree program.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that.
So it has morphed into Hug a Tree, Paddle Smart, there's ATV, Snowmobile, being Winter Smart. So, and it goes from every age group.
So it's when search and rescue no longer becomes such a priority, it's now education that you've kind of moved into.
Yeah, so we want to do community education. We'll go into schools. We are a bilingual team in as much as we have members on the team that are bilingual, so we'll be able to offer this programming. You must be certified through the Adventure Smart programming, which is now a nationally funded program. And in doing so, by us sharing that information, we get a certain amount of funding back from them to a maximum of about $700 a year, I believe. So all the teams sort of cover the entire province. And one team in the Thousand Island team, she's the provincial coordinator for it. So the requests go to her. She disseminates it to the closest team. Whoever's certified on the team picks up and then goes to wherever. We'll do brownies, Boy Scouts, schools. That's the other thing we can offer ourselves up to do. The municipality needs someone to go out and do boil water advisories. We have publicly funded events. We have our own communications. So we like to call it parent find, not child find. So it encourages the kids to come to you. Lost my parents. Can you help me find them? And so there's so many other services, and we are 100% free of charge. We're 100% volunteer based. It's all our own time. And, some of it's sort of out of our own pocket, gas, water, things like that. We are very fortunate this year. We are required to carry liability insurance to be a provincially certified team. And we were very lucky that the municipality sponsored us this year to help cover that initial expense of our first policy. But we're hoping to get some fundraising endeavors underway this fall, so we then are completely self-sustaining and the municipality will not need to fund us. We are very fortunate, though, that they give us the use of the command trailer that we jointly shared with Westnip Police Services before, and now will be to our avail.
So is that the hub of the
team? It's the communication center, the equipment center, the sign-in and out center for any kind of search or an event that we're at.
Okay, and for people that are curious, is there a place you guys meet or somewhere online they can go to? A phone number?
They can, right now, most everything is coming through me. They can, we do have a Facebook page that's not highly maintained because one, I'm really, really busy and not really that techie. So if anybody wants to join the team that has some IT skills, boy, I got some jobs for you. but they can reach me either at shannon1021@hotmail.ca. We have a Westnipissing Search and Rescue Facebook page, as well as if they email me or contact me through there, then I can give them my personal phone numbers that they can get a hold of me. We do sort of classroom training once a month that goes along with sort of any administrative stuff that we need to keep the team in touch with. And then we do try and do one full Saturday a month of practicum training. And then there is a yearly AGM, our general meeting, that is usually involves some exercise training. I was very fortunate this year, and the provincial body, OSARVA, sent two people from every team to one center, and we have now have an online call-out system, very similar to other EMS. And I got to go to Thunder Bay, which was a really excellent opportunity to meet some of the teams up there, meet some of the guys from the Sioux team. That's a really excellent, huge team. There's a couple of new teams that have started to the south of us, got to meet some of those guys. It's actually a really close-knit community, despite the fact that we're spread out through the province.
Holy jump. Well, you've covered everything about that. I had some questions written down, but you just blew through them.
We're really passionate about the search and rescue as well.
I could hear it in your voice. So with this, we're just about at time. So we've talked about the gardens and the search and rescue as well. This is your opportunity to speak out to like everybody in West Nipissing. Is there something you'd like to say that will go to somebody that will go to many ears?
I just, you know, I can never say enough about how much I love this community. My son came here with his fifth school. We were so welcomed. It's a really welcoming community. People come and go, I understand, you know, because of jobs, mining, but the schools are so welcoming. They're so welcoming to new volunteers. And despite being an 85% Francophone community, and I didn't speak really a lick of French when I came here, you don't feel like that. And people just want you to be involved. And it really is a beautiful little community that we're so encapsulated. And I know they say North Bay is the gateway, but I really feel that we are, because from West Nipissing, there's so many different directions north you can go. And it's a great community. And we've got some issues right now, but there's so much opportunity to bring us around and start some of these community stuff to get people involved, because we're not too big, but we're just big enough.
And that was Fascinating People. Thank you for everybody for tuning in. We'll be back next week for another episode. I've been Drew, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Lean to the left, lean to the right. I'm not looking to be safe tonight. Looking for the good life. And this is it.